Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the internet's most hated podcast, the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman, and this week is going to be a very interesting episode, and that's because this past Saturday, the 19th, my Facebook feed kept getting blown up from all my independent filmmaker friends about Amazon Prime taking off their movies from their streaming service. And now, some of the filmmakers were saying that their movies were not affected, but a large chunk of them were saying, yeah, my movies were taken off, this, that, and the other thing. And there was a big heated discussion in regards to going through Amazon themselves or going through a distributor. So I reached out to a lot of these folks and said, please, anyone, if you're like, more than happy to have you on the show. And one of those folks who stepped up is Mark Byrne. Again, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly. If not, please forgive me. And some of you might have heard me speak this name before. He will be releasing a film known as Bigfoot with an exclamation point at the end of the title this upcoming March or I should say within the next couple of months. And yes, I am part of this movie, but that's besides the point. And he was willing to come on our show, or at least speak to us through Skype, and tell us exactly why this is an issue, what the process is, and help explain why it matters to you. Whether or not we fully cover it, we do welcome all of you out there to email the show, longcoatmafia@gmail.com, or message us on Facebook. Our Facebook is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast, and you can leave us a message there, and let us know if we need to clarify a little bit more. But he was willing to, Mark was willing to come on our show and talk to us about this and discuss things with us. So, enough of me rambling about Mark. And he has done, let me just say, he's more than qualified to talk about this matter. Links to his stuff will be in the description below for the episode. So, again, here's that interview. Hey everyone, I am right now on Skype, as you probably heard in our intro, with filmmaker Mark Byrne. Am I pronouncing that right?
That's right.
And just for clarification, even though I've worked with you on, I don't know if how much I'm allowed to say, but I'm going to take Matt Burns' lead with this. I've worked with you and Matt Burns on your upcoming film, Bigfoot! ! But recently, there has been a lot of news coming out with a lot of my independent filmmaker friends like yourself about Amazon's new, if you want to call it, quality policy. And me not being in that particular business, I wanted someone like yourself. If you wish to tell us your qualifications, what you've done, you're more than welcome to do that. Include whatever promoting you wish to do right now.
Okay, great. My name is Mark Byrne. I'm the writer, director, producer for Absurd Productions Pictures. And Absurd Productions Pictures is a mid-Atlantic filmmaker that is a genre neutral. By that I mean we do a different genre each time. We aren't strictly just horror films or just comedies. Multi-genre is probably a better word. We've also worked on features and shorts. Our short films are only available on DVD, but our features, we began putting those out to streaming several years ago for the single-use purchase stream through Amazon. And then about 3 years ago, maybe 2 years ago, I don't remember exactly when it was, Amazon changed their video to allow you could still do the single-use, but then the creation of Amazon Prime, the video part of it, so it was more than just the postage. And they started opening the door to allow people that don't have a lot of financial backing or can't afford to spend over $1,000 to have a person market their services, where we could go directly into their service and have the film streamed through a Prime subscription, which is obviously a great thing for independent filmmakers. You're going to get a lot more hits that way than people taking a chance to pay $3 on, they don't even know who you are. But if all they have to do is click a button, they're happy to do that. And I personally watched many, many independent films that wouldn't be on any other channel. So basically what happened was 2 days ago, I noticed that one of my films was down. It had an exclamation point on it, and it had that little comment about the quality content stuff on there. But once again, this film has been up for about 10 months, almost, or maybe even 11 months now. If there was an issue with it, I would have thought that would have come up by now. Another thing, I know a lot of people have been discussing the closed captioning. That closed captioning has already been handled. They did a similar thing where they went out and said, if you don't have closed captioning, your film will be taken down. And so I got closed captioning for all of my films and got that taken care of.
Now, I don't mean to interrupt, but one of the other things I've heard was that this was from another, through another posting in regards to this, that they had to include a blank audio track for dubbing. Could this be an issue as well? Granted, I'm just naive. I just want to help clarify things for listeners and those that might want to know what the process and the procedure is, not with just Amazon, but if possible, going through a distributor, because I've heard a lot of independent filmmakers say you'd rather go through that they would rather go through a distributor than through Amazon. So I just want to clear a lot of that up and get someone's thoughts again, like yourself.
Well, in terms of that audio track, I did read about that today. I'll be honest with you, that's the first time I've heard of it, and I've got three films on Prime, and I've got multiple other films that I've got available through DVDs. I've never heard of that. So, you know, if you've ever heard moving the goalpost, that seems like a moving the goalpost kind of thing. So we're going to create a requirement after you've already got your film up and then say, oh, wait, you don't meet this requirement. You know, they could easily do that. But I read through their license agreement or whatever. You know, they can pull your film at any time for no reason. You know, they can do whatever they want, pretty much. And in terms of the other thing you said about the going through a distributor rather than Amazon, I would much rather do that. But what I've seen is prices over $1,000. That's before you make a penny. You got to pay them that up front, and that's just above the price range for these films. That's why Prime worked better. I get a percentage of what I earn. I don't have to put up any money. I do have to put up a little bit of money in production cost. You know, I have to get a closed captioning created, which costs some money. I have to get a proof, but it's very, very minimal, very minimal. And that's why it was such a great format. I mean, I just don't understand why a company would make a business decision. If you've got a market cornered, why are you going to give that? It's kind of like Apple giving up on Final Cut. It's the same thing. You've got this great product everybody loves, and you're going to throw it away. And I don't care if you're moving into iPhones or if you want to show superhero movies. Why can't you do both? You know, it seems like they're giving up on at least a percentage of the independent film market. And who knows? Maybe there's more to come. We just don't know.
That's one of the things I heard when you mentioned the cost of going through a distributor. One of the replies I read was that that particular person had to spend like $4,000 for extra for insurance, I think it was. I could be wrong. Plus other fees to get it out. And when I inquired, they said, well, it was the fact that in regards to the distributor, the reason why they made changes is because let me step back. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little topic ADD, because like, as you know, we spoke about this when after filming the scene in Bigfoot, in regards to John Johnson. He said in regards to his latest release, Skeleton Key 3 Part 2, I asked him why wasn't there any features on the DVD. He said the distributor told him no commentary, no extras, no behind the scenes, no extra little goodies for your fans, just the movie, that's it. And when I brought that up as part of a post, they said, yeah, companies do that all the time to kind of placate Redbox, because they had a cover of theirs changed because of Redbox. Have you had anything like this happen to you in regards to a distributor?
No, I've always self-distributed or gone through Amazon or gone through a place where I have to do everything. So I have inquired into distributors, but I've never gone with one because of the money. So the Redbox DVDs would come with the bonus extras, and that I'm asking you this, and that's why they would tell somebody like John Johnson not to have those, because that way Redbox would have a better product theoretically.
Okay. I'm just trying to use examples that some people might have told me and to help better explain it to listeners. What is the process for self-distribution, might I ask?
Well, the process I took was I went through a company called CreateSpace, which is owned by Amazon, as many other companies are, by the way, that are out there. IMDb, I think at one point they owned YouTube. I think Google owns YouTube now, but anyway, CreateSpace was a way to get your film on DVD, and this was prior to streaming. There were I don't even know if Netflix had streaming at the time. Everybody, it was still DVDs primarily. I mean, I guess there were maybe Netflix had started streaming at that point. I don't even think so. So as you know, it all happened very quickly. And what I wanted to do was stay on top of things and follow whatever ways people were using to get to movies. You know, people like to watch through a Roku or Apple TV or one of those things on their TV to get the internet in. And I wanted to be able to be accessible that way. And so I went ahead and then moved over to Prime, but I kept my DVDs too because some people like those. So I want to try to cover everybody. And really, the Amazon Prime model did that. It covered single-use purchase, one-time purchase stream. It covered subscription stream, and it covered DVD. And I mean, that was great. I wish they'd left it alone.
Personally, as a fan of folks at home, I got introduced, again, I'm not knocking Mark in any way, shape, or form. I got into, granted, like a lot of people out there, kind of the level down of low budget films by watching Troma as a kid, and in the smaller market 13 years ago with John Johnson, and at Horrifying seeing this wide range of low budget filmmakers like yourself, Mark, and it just kind of at that point in 2006, it's right when a lot of people like myself look at Hollywood and like, and we're not getting what we need. We're not getting kind of the film variant of what's out there. And here is this plethora of filmmakers, again, like yourself, willing to sell DVDs and let fans like myself into your market. Is that the main reason, or say one of the many reasons, why the DVDs or Blu-rays exist for someone like yourself?
Yeah, because I know that the DVD market is a tenth of what it was, but there's still a lot of folks, particularly with horror films, that still like to collect DVDs for themselves. And I don't know about you, I don't buy that many DVDs anymore because most things I'm willing to stream. But if there's something I really like, I'm not going to take a chance the streaming company brings the film down. I want to own my own copy so I can play it regardless. Or what if I drop that service for some reason and go with another one, and then I don't have access to it anymore? So I think a lot of people, I know people that are the other extreme, that they're like, I'm not ever buying any DVDs. I'm streaming everything. I don't want to own anything. It's a minimalist type.
I get that logic. For me, where I live, I'm not in a big enough space to store a DVD, so digitally helps me out as much. Mm-hmm. But I want to put this to you if you agree to it. Streaming, as I see streaming as a fan, from a fan standpoint, let me put it like that, allows someone like yourself to reach that larger market. Meaning, last week I reviewed a film from someone, I believe he was out of New York City, his independent film, something I wouldn't be able to do without Amazon. Yeah. Whereas locally, I'm able to meet with someone like yourself and pick up a DVD for $5-$10 at the most at a booth you might have at a local convention. Mm-hmm. So there's that convenience of having somebody being introduced locally to an independent and finding out somebody else on a national standpoint that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
That's exactly right. I mean, it's like tiering. You know, you've got one tier, the DVD is more of a personal, you're going to come to my booth and talk to me, and then you're going to buy the DVD from me, and I'm going to hand it to you. The streaming is the opposite. It's someone that doesn't know who I am, has never heard of the movie. You know, I have Conrad Brooks in a couple of movies, and maybe they're a Conrad Brooks fan, so they just search on Conrad, and they find the movie that way, or they find it by searching for science fiction or horror or whatever. I don't know how everybody goes about finding things. Everybody does it differently. Some people might go by actor. But anyway, you're getting a much wider market with the subscription service because people don't feel the pain. They pay that service on an annual basis, and then they can watch whatever they want, and they don't have to shell out $3. You'd be surprised how somebody shelling out $3, a lot of times they'll not watch that movie because, oh, I don't want to spend the $3. I'll just watch something that's on Prime or on Netflix. So, you know, selling the $3 item, once again, it's almost like selling a DVD. Somebody almost needs to know me or know someone in the film to take that chance.
Do you find that with a lot of people, or I should say, granted there's people like me that is willing to take a chance on a filmmaker like yourself or a Conrad Brooks when he was alive. I know he did some films, John Johnson or Todd, I think his last name's Chamberlain, who did
Bottom Creek,
that we know him, we're fans, we'll check him out, but the more mainstream audience that's out there that doesn't know of you or doesn't know of your films or whomever's films, they're immediately going to see Bigfoot. Okay, we're just going to, instead of giving this a 3 or 4 star rating, we're just going to give it an automatic 1 star because it looks like, again, I'm not knocking you personally, it looks like crap in their eyes. Whereas,
right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I think there is some of that bias against independent filmmakers, and you and I probably don't see it as much in the circles we run in. Most of the people I know love independent films and are far more tolerant of an independent film than they would be of a Hollywood film with a big budget. They're more likely to slam that than an independent film. But we're an odd group. You know, we're a minority. There's many more people that are just going to focus on the big budgets. Maybe they like the big actors or the big studio Marvels or whatever, and they just, yeah, like you said, they just think if it's a low budget, it must by definition be crap. And as we all know, that's not true. A movie could have the biggest budget in the world and be crap. It could have zero budget and be great. And really, it's all in the eye of the beholder anyway. I mean, what your favorite movie I might not even like, you know, same vice versa. So, you know, it's getting to that personality that would like your film and getting them to find it. And even in Prime, it's tough to get people to find your film. There's just so many choices out there, and how do they find you, you know, without just looking it up in the search field?
Yeah, there's been many times I've seen a movie on the level of yours, meaning a independent low-budget film, that I've noticed that, hey, this is a great storyline. Why isn't Hollywood working with a storyline like this, and vice versa? And when you look at a major Hollywood film, it's like, wow, this movie kind of, you know, sucks, yet I just watched something from you or Todd or this indie guy person from New York, and it hit it out of the park. And it just didn't have the $10 million, $30 million, $100 million budget that the major Hollywood film has. And I do agree with you on that. It's just that taste. I'm like, this is what we need. At least on my show, I tell a lot of my listeners that don't go out there and complain about, you know, this movie doesn't have this type of actor, this type of person portraying this, when there's a crap ton of indie filmmakers out there actually doing that. You have to take that chance. I just want to see if you kind of agree with that statement, that indie filmmakers like you are the ones that are kind of leading that charge, saying, hey, we might not have liked what we've seen in Hollywood, and we're taking that chance to give you a taste of what we're trying to do.
You're absolutely right. I mean, if you think about it, what is the driving force behind a Hollywood movie? It's making X amount of profit. It's not about anything else. With an independent film, what is the goal line? It's usually, for the filmmaker, it's either something very personal to them. It might be based on something that actually happened to them or a family member. Or it's like with Bigfoot, it's just more of a fun genre that, you know, or something that you've always had an interest in that's kind of fun to do. I've done both. I've done very personal films, and then I've done more fun films like this one. But, you know, the big difference is I was the one making that decision. So say there was a what I like to call an empty suit, a non-creative person who is probably an accountant or a bookkeeper who runs for a major firm, and then I tell them, hey, I want to do a black and white film noir and get Conrad Brooks and da-da-da-da-da and shoot it in D.C. And they're like, there's no market for that. Forget it. You can't do it. Okay, well, I want to do a drinking drama about a bunch of people in a bar, kind of like a, you know, barfly type of thing, and there's no interest in that. No, you can't do it. They would put the kibosh probably on at least two-thirds of the films that I've done in my career. If I had somebody like that standing over me, they would say, okay, yes to comedy, yes to horror, all the rest of the stuff, I'm not going to let you do it because you're not going to, I don't think you're going to make enough money on it. Whereas my decision is okay, if I don't make a penny on it, if it's a story I want to tell, then that's what I'm going to do. I'm the one that's investing the most time in this, so if I don't care about it, then, you know, if I wanted to just make money, I could go up to Charlestown and roll dice or something, you know? I mean, there's more to it for independent filmmakers than just making money, I think. All right, certainly.
That's the thing. I want to say this. To kind of use that reference that you just made in reference to going to Charlestown or a casino and just doing a crapshoot, it's that what surprises me with kind of the modern-day film genre is that you do have a few films like It or Hate It, I'm going to have to use the reference, I do apologize, A Paranormal Activity that was filmed for maybe about $10,000 to $30,000, and here it is, they made a couple $100 million off that film with very little marketing other than maybe a few TV ads, and yet that's a rarity.
Yeah, Night of the Living Dead was another one, right? That had no budget, and nobody knew who George Romero was at the time, but then that blew up. So yeah, something, you never know what could blow up. I mean, Bigfoot could blow up. We don't know. But it's like you said, very few of them do, and I almost feel like the studio system would almost fight it until they think, oh, well, we can't fight anymore, let's buy it, you know?
Right. Just for the sake of clarity, if you wish to answer it, again, you don't have to if you don't want to. What goes into, again, for the folks at home that might not know, what goes into making a film what's the process of making an indie film that a lot of folks do not realize?
You just want me to go through the A to Z, kind of?
If you want to.
Sure. It usually starts off with an idea, just speaking for me personally, it's usually been percolating for a few years. It's not written out or anything. It's just it's a concept. Like, for example, I have three concepts right now on top of Bigfoot. One of those will be the next film, and then the other two will probably be what follows. So I take that concept when I'm ready, And I usually have two or three sitting there, and I choose which one I'm going to do next, and then I basically start writing the script up. And as the script goes, it follows, you know, it follows a process, and a lot of times there's things that I don't like that I take out or add or whatever. Each film is different. Some scripts I'll write them one time, and they're good. Others I end up having to cut a lot or add new stuff. You really, it just kind of depends. So once you've got your script, and I like to nail the script down before I start shooting, because I don't want actors to come in having memorized lines and then I walk in that morning and go, here, you got a new script. We changed the lines last night. I just don't think that's fair to the actor. I know if I was an actor, I wouldn't want to be put in that position. I'd want a couple of weeks to prepare. So once the script is set, then I release it to the actors. Obviously, you have to cast. And most of the casting I do with independent films is word of mouth. It's either people I know or people that I know who tell me about their friend who acts or wants to act or whatever. Bigfoot, you know, a lot of that went through Matt Burns. You and I met through Matt Burns. So word of mouth is a great way, because people can tell you, hey, I've worked with this guy, he's really good, or I've worked with her, she's a professional, you know. And bad stories come out, too. I wouldn't use that person for this reason. So once you get your cast together, then one of the hardest parts is in setting up a schedule. And the schedule's got to be, you know, use of a location, use of actor A and B and C, however many you need. You got to coordinate with all those people to make sure there's a weekend or a weekday or a night or whatever it is that they can do that jives with the location. If it's an outdoor location, you could have rain, you could have snow. I mean, imagine if we had a shoot outside tonight, right?
Right.
So once you've got your schedule down, then you really just go out and shoot it. Obviously, there's things that can happen in the field, but you know, just prepare, be prepared throughout, and get through your shoots, and then you cut the film. And now what I do is I do massive color and sound corrections, because there's always going to be anomalies that come up that you can't control on the set. There's going to be things you don't hear when you're on the set, and when you get home and you're in the quiet of your studio that you know, really bother you, that didn't bother you when you're shooting. And so you got to clean all that stuff up, and I've just gotten to the point now that I scrub the entire movie for audio and video. And you don't always have to do that, but I just want it to be as clean as I can. And then once all that's done, then you get your output, and depending on where you're going to, what you're going to do with your film, you know, you'd have to get a certain output for a DVD, a certain output for streaming, that kind of thing. And then you go to your channels and often go through a bunch of rigmarole with your channels on loading up stuff, and there's always problems. And that's probably the most frustrating part of it, because you're so close to the end and then you're having IT hang-ups. But once you get it and finally comes clean and it's live and you can announce it to everybody and everybody can go see it, and, you know, it's a big happy day. Kind of like winning the Super Bowl, and then the next day you get back to work on the next one.
Two things. First off, over the years, have you found it become easier, if not cheaper, to film in high def and digitally? Because one of the things I heard over the past few years is that because of technology becoming more and more cheaper, I know you filmed digitally when we were on the set of Bigfoot. Has that being able to convert over to digitally helped a lot because the technology is now more readily available and cheaper?
It's certainly cheaper, absolutely. I mean, I'm the price for a digital camera is now less than, you know, standard definitions were years ago. What I found, though, is I found the IT technology to be more complicated. The uploading of things and having to convert into 15 different things, and every time you do something, there's a place for an error to be committed. And once that error is in there, then you got to figure out where the error came in. And if you've got 10 steps, then you could spend a week testing to try to figure out where your error is. And, you know, they're not really going to help you. That's all on you.
Sorry to interrupt. Meaning that if a place like Apple for ITV or their iTunes or iMovie, they want format X and the next person wants format Y and Amazon wants format Z. Is that what you're talking about in reference to?
Yeah, that's part of it, and the other part is how you transmit the format. And oftentimes, that's really where the problems are. It's like, okay, I can give you whatever format you want, you know, except maybe for Blu-ray, but almost any other format I can create fairly easily through the tools. But then when it comes to transmitting, you know, I load something up and I get an error, and I don't know, you know, instead of telling me what the problem is, you just say there's been an error. Well, what is the error so I can fix it?
Right.
So this is the kind of frustration. I think part of that, I mean, this is just a conspiracy in me, theorist in me talking here, but what better way to convince people they need to spend $4,000 and go through a distributor, right? Than creating all these roadblocks for the guy trying to get his film up without breaking the bank. You know?
Again, I think that kind of goes back to Amazon's definition of quote-unquote quality, is because they don't tell you, they might not tell you as a filmmaker what you need to change in that particular movie in regards to fixing that error in order to it meeting their quality assurance. So, and being that vague does not help you, the filmmaker, and doesn't help us, the fans that want to watch your films. So,
absolutely. Absolutely, and that's a major issue. The communication factor is very poor. I'll just be honest with you. I would like to know, I want to know everything. So if you say, hey, your title's not selling enough, we have a floor, you have to reach this number of minutes per month or per year. If you don't, we'll pull it. Hey, you tell us that up front, we all understand that. And then we can do things to try to promote the movie. Go, hey, folks, I need everybody to go out and watch this movie again because they're going to pull it if we don't hit certain numbers. You know, that's probably why they don't do that, because then we can't do anything about it, and then we just find out our movie has been pulled. But, yeah, I wish we had better communication, and it just makes me wonder what's behind it, because I think if you are vague like that, there's a reason for writing vague language. A lawyer probably wrote that language and wrote it that way for a reason.
I think that's also why a lot of filmmakers that are kind of for a distributor, they're saying that, I think one or two might have said it, that, hey, go with a distributor. If they put it on Amazon, they're able to easily, meaning Amazon's able to tell such and such distributor, this is exactly what you is needed to meet the standards, whereas when it comes to someone who's just representing themselves, it's the aspect of, to heck with you. We're not going to tell you diddly squat unless you have XYZ distributor, you know, part of your title. So,
yeah, and you know, it kind of works like the employment field, right? If you go to a big fancy headhunter employer and pay $1,000 and da da da, then they can cut you to the front of the line, you know. So you're paying to get your film put on there, but I'm paying you to make money, kind of. You the distributor, you the Amazon, you the Hulu, whoever it is, I'm paying you to make money. Maybe it's just an upfront and they don't get a percentage afterward. I don't know. I know there's different models. But, hey, God bless them. If somebody's got the money to do that, I think it's smart. And I think you probably are going to be a lot safer if you spent $2,000 to $4,000 to get your movie on Amazon. I don't know that your movie's coming down from Amazon. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But those of us that didn't do that, and I'm sure that they know who did what. They know who spent what. It might be that we might have hit on it. It might be, okay, folks, you want your movie up here. You know your friend spent the money, and his movie's still on, yours isn't. So read between the lines.
But I can understand your point of view and that of many others saying that, wait a minute, Amazon, you are my distributor.
Exactly.
Why do I have to go through another party and a filter, in essence, to get my movie up there and have it stay up there, whereas you are my distributor, why do I have to go through that filter, in a way? Now, I could be wrong.
No, I think you're right. And it, like I said, it's a lot of work to get, you know, we talked about the captioning briefly. You've got to go find a third-party company to make your caption. You've got to load that caption up there, and if it doesn't come up right, no one's going to tell you what's wrong with it. I spent hours on the phone with the caption company. I spent months, lots of emails with Amazon, And one day I loaded one up and it worked. And I never figured out why. Nobody ever told me what it was. I kind of felt like a room full of people sitting around laughing at me because all I had to do was do one little thing that nobody would tell me, you know?
One of the other things I wanted to ask you about, how does sites like Indiegogo and GoFundMe affect filmmakers? Or are they a benefit or are they a hindrance to folks such as yourself?
Well, I think they're a benefit. I think the issue with all those things is there's just so many of them now that it's tough. I mean, you know, everybody wants to help their friends and they want to help, you know, charities and this and that. But, you know, if you can't do every, you can't put money on everything or you're not going to be able to pay your own bills. So I've never personally used one of those, but I have seen people raise a lot of money. And it might be the difference in somebody's film getting made or not. In fact, I know it is in some cases. So I think it's a good thing. But I wish that we didn't have quite so many of these GoFundMe campaigns. You know, there's just so many of them out there. I think it dilutes, you know, people that really need money for medical benefits or people that are really trying to get their money together. You know, there's a lot of scams going on and there's a lot of copycat type of things going on, so that's hurting more than anything. I think if we just had the clean, you know, ask for money for a legitimate purpose things, I think we'd do better. You know,
I think it's also the part of I'm not knocking those who do it, but when you have 50, 60, 80 filmmakers or artists that want to do a GoFundMe per se or Indiegogo, you can't, someone like myself can't support them all,
right,
or in the way that we might like to.
So
it's kind of hard for someone like myself, but I can understand why they would like to. Now that I think of it, one of the things is that I would like to ask, I probably already know the answer to it, is would someone like yourself have to deal with the MPAA, or I should say the folks that put ratings on the films, in regards to some of the folks out there that might say, I don't know what I'm going into in regards to this independent filmmaker because I don't know if it's safe for my kids or for my family without that rating?
Yeah, personally, I like the ratings because I like information, whether it's, you know, what's in the food I'm buying or what's in the movie I'm looking at. I mean, that's how I'm going to make a decision. So, yeah, if I say I don't want my kids seeing anything above, you know, say a PG Star Wars type of movie, then with no rating, it's difficult to tell that. I would love if independent films could put some sort of a rating on there. Matt and I were talking about, you know, is Bigfoot an R or a PG-13? And I said I think it's an R because of language. He said it's probably, he thinks it's more closer to a PG-13, but I said, well, 13-year-olds, that might be a little too violent for them. Truthfully, it's a PG-15, but they don't have that grouping. Maybe
right.
You'd have it by age. You just say, and it's like for Bigfoot, I would probably select 15 or 16 and say, okay, if it's under that age, then parents, you know, then you have to ask yourself, do I want my kids to see this? And some parents would have no issue with it. And others would be, no, absolutely not. You're not going to watch that until you're 16 years old, you know?
Right.
But I think parents should have all that information because how else are they going to decide? And they may say, hey, this is a great movie for me. Later on when the kids are in bed, but right now let's watch something else because I think this is too violent or I don't want them listening to that type of language, you know. Without information, how are you going to make a decision? I do think that I think that having all that information would help.
Well, it is. I'm trying to manage, pardon my kind of commentary, I'm trying to manage a lot of things right now, and says here, Matt just sent me an article again. Says Amazon once again, it's part of, where it is, Blogspot.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that today.
Okay,
I think I posted that as well.
I think it's the same one. It's it says Amazon once again sets its sights on screwing indie filmmakers. Read about it and what movies are yours you can no longer see on Amazon in our new blog. I guess it's basically what we're talking about now.
It is.
Now, I know I spoke to several people, including John Johnson. They weren't hit, at least not yet, in regards to Amazon. Granted, I extended an open invite to them to be on the show. It's standard courtesy. I'm personally glad that you are willing to come on the show. I think we pretty much covered a lot of stuff. There's not much more I could think of, unless you want to add anything to it.
Well, I want to thank you for covering this. I mean, that's why I set the time aside to talk about it, and I'm happy I filled out a couple surveys on Facebook. I know there's a lot of discussion out there about it. I hate to be, I'll just be honest here, I'm pessimistic about it. I think that they are going to do what they want to do, and I don't know how much they care, but it's great that we're all telling them. You know, people are sending notes to them and saying, you know, I'm going to cancel my membership because you're taking all these movies I like off. And I mean, that's the only way that we're going to have any impact. If we can impact their bottom line, then that will, you know, you can't talk to them about, oh, it's not fair or how much work I did or anything. They don't care about that. It's their bottom line. So if enough people are willing to drop their membership because of this change in format, then they could quickly reactivate those accounts and we could get back to it. It's going to take a lot of people, though. But I was very encouraged. I mean, we're talking day two here, and there have been several podcasts out about it. There's been people have written dissertations on Facebook about it. Now, of course, the mainstream media, other than that one article, is not. I've searched on the Internet for the last 2 days, and that's the only article I've found. So maybe we're ahead of the curve here. I don't know.
If we are, that's great. And if this episode post up at the height of that curve, I'll be posting it up no matter what. Before we continue, kind of phase things out here, is there anything you would like to promote?
I'd like to promote the website. It's absurdproductionspictures.com, and the reason I'm saying go there is we have links to all of our films on the website. So you can go to the website one place and click the link. It'll take you to Amazon or IMDb or wherever the movie is. You don't have to bother searching 15 different places. If you just want the ones on Prime, you'll see a thing called Amazon Prime Jump Off or something. I can't remember what the exact name was. But it has all of our Prime movies in one location. Also have a Vimeo page there. It has all of our trailers in one location. So, and then if you what I'd recommend is go watch the trailers, and then if you like one of the films, then go to that individual film, and you'll see what your buying options are. Some of them are DVD, some of them are streaming, some of them are both, and I hope all of you out there that like Bigfoot will also give other films a chance. We've got a lot of different genres. I know not every single one of them may be for you, but you probably will find at least one that you'll like. We have two with Conrad Brooks. We have one with Lana Wood. And we have some that don't have anybody famous, but they're still good films. So we have trailers for all but one of them. We have descriptions of all of them. And it's all right there at absurdproductionspictures.com.
Folks, I'm going to ask Mark right here to send me links to his Vimeo page with all the trailers and his website, so that way I could post them up in the show's description, and as you might see, when we post this episode up to at least our Facebook page and other sites, we have we'll post the links there as well to find Mark. Is that okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
you want me to post them on your Long Coat Mafia podcast Facebook page?
Once I send you the links, Mark, you could do with them as you please, or if you wish okay. Now to, I could send you links to the show. That way, fans of your movies could be notified as soon as this show goes live.
Oh, great, great.
So we could do that after show. Which, if you want, we could end it now. If you want.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Chris, for what you do. Appreciate you taking on this. You know, this impacts you as a viewer, and you know, the independent film market. We're all in this together, even more so now after this. So, We all need each other's backs, and I think that's what I've seen a lot of today, a lot of people supporting each other and trying to get to the bottom of what's going on. And
hey, again,
for doing this today.
It's been a pleasure to have you on the show to explain things from an indie filmmaker's perspective and tell us the process that you go through and your opinions today.
All right. Happy to help.
No problem. And folks, stick around for where to find our show if you haven't found it already or if you're listening through a different source. Thank you all. Hey everyone, welcome back, and special thanks to Mark for coming on the show and talking to us about this issue explaining to us about the process and what goes into everything and helping all of me and everyone else kind of understand why filmmakers can be so passionate and angry about this issue. If you wish to join in the conversation or if you have any further questions, comments, or what have you, you could always email us at longcutmafia@gmail.com. Our Twitter and our Instagram handles are both the same, and that is Longcoat Mafia. And let's see, what else am I forgetting for all of you out there? Yes, our YouTube page. I know I've been promising more videos, and I assure you there are more videos on the way. I just have to sew a few things together and post other things up. I just don't want to do it so close to an episode. Just do a search on YouTube for Longcoat Mafia podcast and we will come up. Please include the podcast part of it so our show does come up higher on the list. And please hit that subscribe button while you're there, because there will be a few more exclusive videos on our YouTube channel than our Facebook page. So, but stick around to our Facebook page, because there will be a few exclusive videos there every now and again. Let's see. What else am I forgetting? I said Twitter. I said Facebook. I said Instagram. I told you guys and gals about our YouTube channel. Oh, yeah. Our Mixer.com channel. That channel is mixer.com/LCMP. And the LCMP is in uppercase. Link will be in the show's description, kind of down below on our website. You could find us. Yeah, that's what I've been forgetting. This is what happens when you tend to do other takes. You could always find us if you want to listen to us on your laptop or desktop computer and you want to listen to us at your leisure. You can do so by going to our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And all our episodes are there, going way back to the beginning. You can hear the other panels that we've done in the past. If your panels are your thing, the interviews we've done, the few special episodes that we've done. So that's there. Plus, we are available on iTunes if you prefer getting our episodes that way. And if you're a new subscriber, this is your first episode of our podcast. If you do, there are at least, even though we're up to close to 190 episodes, or close to, I should say, close to 200 episodes, you'll be able to go back to at least the past 90 episodes, that's including this episode. You could find us if you're a person on the go. You are able to find us on both Apple Podcasts and Google Play Music/Google Play Podcasts. Not to mention, we are also available on Stitcher Radio, Spotify, both of which have mobile apps if you so choose. Plus, we are available on the Podbean app. And I believe you can listen to all our episodes on the Podbean app. And I do recommend you using the Podbean app just in case Apple Podcasts and Google Play decide to go, heck with this, we don't want to snag you the current episode this week. So, I just want to say thank you all for listening and stay tuned for next week. I'm not exactly sure what we'll be covering next week, because it could be a complete surprise like it was this week, and it was a pleasant surprise. surprise this week to have Mark on the show to discuss being a filmmaker, and let's see what happens. See you all next week.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.